Samuel is one of the great prophets of ancient Israel. He lived about 1000 BC, and he served during the period when Israel was transitioning from being overseen by the judges to being ruled by a single king. When the people demanded a king, they went to Samuel. And Samuel first anointed Saul as king, and that didn't go so well. And then he anointed David, and that went a little better. Samuel's parents were Hannah and Elkanah. And we can read about his birth in the first chapter of the book of 1 Samuel. Elkanah had two wives, Hannah and Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah did not. And Peninnah mercilessly mocked Hannah for not having children. Elkanah, the husband, loved Hannah and told her, "Don't worry about it." But Hannah did worry about it. One year, Elkanah took his family on their annual pilgrimage to the temple at Shiloh. And during the festival, Hannah sneaks away to the sanctuary so that she might offer a prayer and ask for a child. The priest, Eli, observes this woman in the temple praying with great animation and assumes that she is drunk. He orders her to leave the temple, but she explains to him her reason for being there, and he realizes that he is mistaken, and he blesses the woman. Upon returning home, Hannah becomes pregnant and gives birth to Samuel. Because of her promise to Eli at the temple, when the boy is old enough, she offers him to the Lord and leaves him in the care of Eli to be raised as a priest. She visits her son frequently. Our reading for this week begins when Samuel is still a boy. Samuel is an apprentice priest, and Eli, the same priest, is his mentor. Tradition tells us that Samuel was about 11 years old. He lives at the temple compound at Shiloh. One night, when it was late and Samuel was lying in his bed in the temple, God calls to him saying, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel logically assumes that the voice belongs to Eli, so he runs to Eli and says, "Here I am, for you called me." Eli tells the boy, "I didn't call you. Go back to bed." And so Samuel does. A second time, Samuel hears his name and he goes to Eli and he says, "Here I am." And again, Eli says, "I did not call you. Go back to bed." A third time, Samuel hears his name and again he goes to Eli. But this time, Eli figures out there is something unusual going on here. And he suspects that it may be God calling the boy. So Eli instructs Samuel, saying, "Go lie down in your bed, and if he calls you again, you shall say this. Say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" Samuel does as Eli instructs, and he goes back to bed. A fourth time, the Lord comes and calls to Samuel as before, and Samuel responds, but this time says, "Speak, for your servant is listening." This is the story of the calling of Samuel. As a young boy serving in the temple at Shiloh, God calls out to him, and this call over his lifetime will lead him to become a great leader of his people, a great prophet. But there is more going on here than just God calling out to Samuel. The underlying substance of the story can be found in the first three verses of our reading. It begins, "Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord under Eli." This part we know. But then we are told, "The word of the Lord was rare in those days. Furthermore, visions were not widespread." What a sad statement that is. The word of the Lord was rare and visions were not widespread. It would seem that the people are living in a spiritual desert. They are deprived of God's company. We are then informed that the eyesight of Eli the priest has dimmed. Not only are visions sparse, but the eyes of the priest aren't so good either. So it makes you wonder, is there a connection here? And yes, there is. The one whose job it is to see the Lord can no longer see. And we will learn later that Eli's sons, whom he has placed in positions of power, are stealing from the temple. Things are not good. However, they're not as dismal as they may seem. Despite this darkness, we are informed that the lamp of God had not yet gone out. And this lamp would have been an actual lamp in the temple. It was probably lighted each day and allowed to burn out during the night as the oil was used up. By telling us that the lamp had not gone out, the writer is describing the approximate time that the events with Samuel take place. Sometimes during the night, but before the lamp goes out. But the writer is also reassuring us that God is still active and present. The lamp of God continues to burn. You remember the Ark of God, which is that container housing the tablets of the Ten Commandments, that was kept in the temple, and that was where Samuel was sleeping, near the Ark. And this was considered to be God's throne on earth. So by pointing out that the lamp of God still burned, the writer is letting us know that, yes, God is there. God is present. It is in the temple on this night that God calls out to Samuel. And at this point in his life, Samuel's just an ordinary boy. We are told Samuel did not yet know the Lord, and the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. So don't expect Samuel to be some spiritual prodigy just waiting to burst forth. He's just a kid in an apprenticeship to be a priest. When God does call him, he doesn't even recognize the voices belonging to God. He assumes it's Eli. But even that sight-impaired priest can see that, yes, God is near. In a few moments, we will be installing church officers, elders, and deacons. These fine folks are not officers because they were elected by you, which they were. They are officers because they have been called. And hopefully, they didn't accept this call out of a sense of obligation, but out of an invitation by God. As Presbyterians, we believe strongly in being called. I was called to pastor, just as elders and deacons are called to their particular ministries. A call requires that one be called by God, as well as being called by the community. An individual may unilaterally declare, "I've been called by God." But the community may respond and inform that person, "Yeah, you may have gotten a call, but we're pretty sure that was a wrong number." A proper call involves the community and God working together. And the way that works in our church is that the congregation elects a nomination committee, and through prayer and discernment, that group of people representing you seeks those within the congregation who they feel have been called to these offices. Sometimes they choose a name, and that person vehemently denies, "Nope, I have not been called." But when both sides do agree, we say that person has been called. Installing new officers at the beginning of each year represents a new start in the life of our church, new leadership with new eyes. And I want to be very careful when I say that. This does not mean that the outgoing officers have gone blind like Eli the priest. No, their eyes are just fine. But new eyes see things differently. They see things that others might miss. New eyes and fresh ears, all of these things working together for the betterment of our church. I've spoken with each of these officers, and I know that being called is a humbling experience for them. They are a little anxious about the responsibilities they are undertaking. They're never sure that they will do a good job. They question whether or not they really have been called. They have, but they are good people, and they are not serving alone. You are here with them, and more importantly, God is with them. Together, we are serving to bring the kingdom into this world. God calls us to service because God knows us. Last week we looked at Psalm 139, in which the psalmist proclaimed how well God knew him, that God had searched him out and found him, that God knew his actions, his thoughts, his words, even before he spoke them. God knew his life before he had been born. God knows us. God calls each of us to serve in different ways. We only need to listen. So today, is the word of the Lord rare? Are visions really few and far between? For some people, they may be. Some may feel that God's not listening, that God has forgotten them. Some may feel that our systems are broken and people are being left behind. There are no guarantees that we as officers and all of us will serve in easy times. That is the challenge of serving God. We are called not to keep the church running smoothly day to day. We are called to change that which has been broken, to see beyond this world, to bring sight to the blind, good news to the poor, to proclaim release to the captives, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord. And sometimes this call takes us into dangerous territory, but we go. We go because we've been called. Amen.